women getting called out of really important meetings at work that they've worked their asses off to get to. You know, they've got their few kids out the door that morning. They've done all their exams and passed them with flying colours in order to be sitting in that meeting. And then school phones and says, oh, someone's got a tummy ache. You have to come and get them. Why is the dad not getting that phone call?
Yeah.
Why is this still the pattern? And it is still, and there'll be a few men being cross about this and saying, yes, but I took blah, blah to a party the other week. Why is that an exception, and why are we celebrating that?
Today's guest. So you've come to know her as the co-host of your, let's just say it, your favourite podcast. I know her as my best pal since teenhood, aka, where should I start? My confidant extraordinaire, my mopper of tears, my purveyor advice I haven't actually always wanted to hear, but was always really annoyingly right. And the woman that I love to the very tips of my toes, Jennifer Cox. And the wonderful news is, my dear listener, that shortly you too will get your very own pocket-sized Jen. No, it's not a dolly, but in the form of her new brilliant book, which launches on the 4th of July, which is my birthday, so I think it's a very serendipitous date. Her book is called Women Are Angry, Why Your Rage is Hiding and How to Let It Out. I am so happy that today we get to discuss all things angry with the goddamn goat of anger herself, the guru who is going to tell you how to make that fury into a positive, propulsive energy for your life. Jennifer Cox, hello.
Hi. you know how on the news, when the man I'm thinking of is the one that, when they're reading out the election results, they always bring him in. He's like a professor of political science. You know him.
Yeah.
And whenever they introduce him, he always kind of, I love that man. He's so humble. He's so clever and he's so humble.
You're here. Anyway, it's fine. You can say you're clever. Yeah.
That aside, he all sits and, you know, with his legs crossed and like staring quite earnestly at the floor, like there's something really interesting on the floor because he's so embarrassed by the introduction. Anyway, yeah. I felt like him. I felt like, honestly, I felt so much like him that if I'd looked up and become a sort of...
But which bit? What did you say? What did I say that you were like...
I honestly think it's like just being talked about in positive terms. Isn't that
channeling?
I know.
I mean, I kind of, you know, I mean, mocker of tears.
Yeah.
Just correct.
Facts.
Just facts. We've had many conversations where you've gone, look, this is what I think. Mm. I don't think this is the case. And I've gone, fuck.
Mm.
And you have been right all along.
Mm. I'm saying, obviously, you've also done the same thing for me.
Yeah, sure. But, you know, I haven't just written a book called Women Are Angry, which is coming out on the 4th of July. By the way, I'm gonna just like really subtly put that into conversation all the way through.
I love
so people kind of that are in a kind of hypnotic state by the end of it and just buy it without even thinking.
That's what we want.
You see, I've got this like
app. It's sort of cultish.
Jennifer Cox, what makes you angry?
Go. Okay. Right. This, you and I are not fans of the domestic. We've, you know, and I think this will take me to a larger point in a bit about how you don't get a choice as a woman. You just have to be someone who can do the domestic, even if you hate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really resent, you know, at the end of a day, and often I have a very, very tight window where I've finished sessions, come back home, have more sessions to do in the evening. I do like Zoom clinic in the evening. Very tight window, often lots of stuff going on in the household. Have to provide a meal for whoever's in. obviously it has to conform to all the acceptable parts of a meal that these people will eat.
I mean, you say obviously. Obviously, I have gone beyond the acceptable at the moment. But anyway.
Yeah. When I say acceptable, I mean it's not going to cause an allergic reaction.
Okay, fine.
You know, that is a lot.
That worried me then. Okay. Yeah.
Then for me to do that, say, dinner's ready or whatever, have to phone people around the house because, again, music's so loud. It's a very loud house, I might add, which in its own way really ramps up stress levels. So trying to phone people in various rooms, like, to get them to come.
To be clear, this is not because I live in a winged mansion. This is because teenagers can only function with huge headphones strapped to themselves at all times.
I think this is a kind of kick in the teeth when you've bothered to make this thing and they can't even come down. And I remember my own mum absolutely hating that. And I totally relate to that now. Anyway, so those are the kind of micro domestics.
Yes.
Larger. So I suppose what I would say is it's not so much what makes me angry, it's how the hell are we still here? How is this still happening to women? There's the obvious stuff about discrimination, sexism, overt, covert, we're not safe, etc. I guess what I've really come to realize is how incredible women are. Because I look around me at the women in my life, you know, family, other people that are, you know, basically my sisters. And I look at my incredible patients and I think, you're all being absolutely shafted. And it's something around actually this idea of what's expected of us in terms of work, woman, work, like, you know, do your best at school. Here are all the careers you could have. Shiny, astronaut, astrophysicist, surgeon. Do it. Go for it, woman. Oh, but you will also have to make sure that that person hasn't got nits and we've run out of froobs and someone's having a meltdown. This is the conversation that I want to be having, is how has this happened? Because it is killing us. And the women that I see in my practice and my dearest friends, I look at the symptoms, physical, psychological, and actually what I see is a set of really, really amazing people that are being gaslit and exploited, and their bodies are keeping the score.
As I sit here on a Sunday morning in my grubby old dressing gown, viewing you, this really makes my every vein and cell tingle because, the idea of go, woman, go. Oh, but also the froobs. I mean, the froobs, we've got to trademark that, because that is that's a phrase that encapsulates it all for me.
King froobs.
We've run out of froobs.
Yeah.
Text.
Who had the last ones?
Yeah. Oh my God, you took one.
And do you know what I hate is when you find the box in the fridge and there's none.
There's empty box. There's always empty boxes.
So you think we've got enough.
Mm-hmm. I also, a little aside here, this is not how I intended it to go. I intended it to go, as you well know, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, of a house free of froobs, you're getting it in the neck, but, you know, all of you, froob-type items. And I imagined us all sitting around a dinner table, regaling each other on a daily basis with hilarious tales from our days.
Maybe you'd be talking about politics in your fantasy.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Engaged, next generation. And we would all take turns always of the chores, and everybody would listen to my division of labour and take it on board, and we would frolic through life.
Eating things like hearty,
yes,
be having like beef bourguignon or maybe something vegan.
Yeah,
on that point.
Yeah. A lot of stews, a lot of slow cooked rice, and yeah, and my children would voluntarily eat purple sprouting broccoli. God, I'm so middle class.
Okay, totally agree. Thought life would just fall into those easy grooves.
Is it an arrogance?
Well, is it an arrogance or is it like conditioning and indoctrination? Because why were our fantasies like that?
True.
Why weren't we thinking we would be heading up the UN? And maybe that husbands would be at home thinking about broccoli and not frubes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I guess there's something about this assumption that we're all, that we've all internalized that that's our job. And that then school picks up on that and we're the ones that get phoned. So, you know, women getting called out of really important meetings at work that they've worked their asses off to get to. You know, they've got their few kids out the door that morning. They've done all their exams and passed them with flying colours in order to be sitting in that meeting. And then school phones and says, oh, someone's got a tummy ache. You have to come and get them. Why is the dad not getting that phone call?
Yeah.
Why is this still the pattern? And it is still, and there'll be a few men being cross about this and saying, yes, but I took blah, blah to a party the other week. Why is that an exception? And why are we celebrating that? Look at what we do. And would we not be prime minister if we didn't have to think about NITs and asthma inhalers?
I also have many pals who say that their very sweet husbands babysit.
Yes.
Interesting. True. Yeah, that they kind of go, oh, it's really good. He's babysitting all weekend, so I can go. And I don't have the heart to go, what?
You don't babysit your own children. I might start calling on babysitting as well then.
No, exactly. Can't do anything. I'm babysitting. Yeah. I mean, I loved being a babysitter as a teenager, but, you know.
No one's paying for this.
No one's paying for this, exactly. Jen, when have you ever found it difficult to express anger? Do you ever find it difficult to...
So what I would say is my natural default was always guilt and feeling bad.
I know.
So, you know, instead of standing my ground and going, hang on, there's something wrong with this situation and I'm being expected to contort myself so that it goes right again, which I'm much, much better at now, and doing, you know, identifying that this is what women do typically, and obviously years of personal therapy has allowed me to crowbar myself out of that and get more insistent actually about, no, this does not feel right and I'm not taking the hit for it, and you're not going to make me feel bad so that the situation smooths itself out. So i.e. I guess I have got better at saying no to things, saying something doesn't work for me, not letting what's happening for somebody else change my behavior or my feelings, which is something that I think, frankly, I was conditioned into from very, very young, along with, I would say, most of the female population.
My God. No, I haven't finished, Siley.
He's gonna come.
Nothing. Daddy came in naked. It's fine. Off you go, baby.
That's brilliant.
I think also this is such a great... Some of this has to remain in the final podcast, because the fact that I'm doing this in my dressing gown with a naked husband coming in and then a son and a trombone.
And a son and a trombone. And there's something so celebratory about that. And we should just tell listeners, because if we cut out a lot of that, what just happened was that Salima's husband walked in naked, was completely unashamed, did like a full provocative dance. Fortunately, my eyes were sealed shut through the whole experience. I'd never have to unsee What a
well done.
Well, I have seen. Okay, so guilt. Yeah, so it would have gone to guilt. I'm getting much better. And I think this is also, this is the beautiful thing about therapy, is that it's a bit like with parenting. You learn, you kind of be, you become the person that you want to hear yourself be. But
say that again, say that again. That's a really nice, so you become the person that you want yourself to be.
Yes.
That's really lovely.
And that is by kind of showing other people how to do it for themselves. You start internalizing these messages and going, yeah, why aren't I doing that?
That gives, I think, a lot of hope to a lot of mothers, you know, right now who are listening, that if you start actioning some of these things, it starts going into your head and it becomes habitual. It doesn't have to all be black or white, yes or no. There are all these shades and it's all up there for the for grabs, right?
You can trust
step by step.
Yeah, and like little tweaks and, you know, just making a slightly different decision next time, learning from what went wrong then, learning from what didn't feel good for us then, and thinking, okay, I have choices here. There could be different outcomes.
You've taught me that, actually, as my mate, Jennifer Cox. That's one of the things that I really love about our friendship, that you, where you inject humour and you go, yeah, yeah, here we, yeah. So you're saying that, catastrophizing mental thought again, Salima. Remember the last time, remember this, like you're very good at remembering patterns rather than rushing to me and going, it's all going to be okay, have a big hug, which you're great at too. But you're very good at saying, let's have a look at this. There's a pattern in your life, my dear friend.
Yeah.
And look at the realities of that. And so, yeah, it is uncomfortable and it is weird. You're also very good at having helped me and many of your other pals, I think, with this, at sitting with the uncomfortable. And I think in turn that has helped you sit with the uncomfortable in your life.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And it is interesting, that kind of chicken and egg thing where you're not quite sure sort of where something comes from. I think also, so I think humour is a massive part of, you know, part of me is just laughing all the time.
Yeah. But also, look, that's why you're so dear to me, because, and I just think humour is the main foundation for any relationship, actually, in my world. Because if it means we look at the universe in the same way.
Totally. And you just don't take anything completely seriously. There's always a bit standing off to the side.
Yeah, agree.
Almost especially like the darker and more like disturbing something is, the more this like part of me gets invoked. And I think also there's something about when you work in the sort of like the medical side of life, and let's be honest, I've worked with some quite disturbing and disturbed people across time, murderers, paedophiles, lots and lots of violent men. And I guess you can't survive that type of work unless there's a bit of you going, oh, that was gross, or I don't know.
Yeah, but I think anybody who has been through anything remotely, and tell me if I'm not using this word correctly, traumatic, if you've come out the other side, and ultimately most of us do, right? Most of us manage to get through the stormy seas to the other side, whatever that trauma or traumatic events are in your life. And I think it does instill in you a certain wonderfully dark humour that is the most gloriously funny thing for me.
Yeah.
I don't find anything as funny.
Yeah.
That for me is true belly laugh humour.
Yeah. When it is like there's a sort of just fuck it. There is nothing to lose here.
And it's a recognition of the human spirit, isn't it? It's saying, I see you. I really see you. And all of this, it is all such an illusion and such madness. And we are all going to die. I know I always say this and I'm worried about kind of bringing this out, but I find real comfort from the fact that we're all going to die.
And that I always tell you, we've only got about 10 years left, Salima.
Yes. No, but honestly, Jen, I really do. And I, you know, and I'm glad that you know, we can talk like this because, we're all ultimately vapor. We're all ultimately dust, aren't we? So we need to have a little humour around all of this brief moment on Earth.
Totally. Mm. And I think I would add music to that. So for me,
you love it, don't you?
I am obsessed with music, and I guess so is the household, which is partially also why it's a very loud household. Mm-hmm. But it's our language, like humor and music. It's like everything else is a mess, but it's a way of communicating with each other, expressing things, sharing, connecting. And I, in my darkest days, or you know, my angriest days, it's what I turn to.
And who's your go-to? I know who it is, but who, tell them who it is.
Oh my god, you know who it is. It's Jarvis, isn't it?
I know.
There's something about, I mean, there's also, I would say Prince is up there too.
Oh,
in our household, when Prince died, a member of our family died. You know, that's, I would say, how I've handled feelings, how, what I lean on, what I think is of value for me in terms of, you know.
Music and humour. I mean, those are two real Jennifer Cox trademarks, actually. That and your excellent dress sense. I do think you sometimes use clothes as an armor.
Oh, yeah. And maybe as a tool of expression and joy, I guess.
Yeah, I think you do. Yeah, I really enjoy that about you. When has anger driven you to do something incredible, which is hilarious?
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Yes. But take me back first, because I would start you off as the two little state school kids at Cambridge.
Nice.
And I would say there were many incredible moments there back then too, and earlier. So come on, take me back before we get to the obvious.
Yeah, so back. I think there's loads of family stuff that I guess has primed me for the fight.
Sure.
I think being a kid that went to Cambridge, and you know this and you'll have felt this, primes you for the fight. State school kid, Cambridge, primes you for the fight. You won't be there. You couldn't have been there in the 90s unless you had that in you.
Also, state school kid coming from your little town, little area, it's not a kind of like...
It's not a London.
You know.
End of the line.
Yeah.
Highest teenage pregnancy rate in Europe.
Mm.
It was not an ambitious place.
No.
Yes. Mm. That. And then I guess maybe there is something about, you know, the line of work I took, specifically in terms of going in at the deep end and working forensically and doing all that stuff. So seeing the kind of really immersing yourself in the darker side of life, of the mind, the psyche. And then seeing how much of that actually exists and runs through every side of life, you know. And I suppose there's something poetic but also really disturbing about that once you see it, you can never really unsee. And I guess I use all of that now, the learning, the struggle, the conflict, and the joy. Like, just, I have so much fun.
I know.
And I suppose I never thought I would end up as a sort of activist, but in one sense I've always been. And now it's more formalized and tangible.
I think one of our guests once used that phrase, didn't they? A joyful warrior.
Joyful warrior.
Yeah, and I think that is where I see you. That is where I see us going with this.
And yeah,
what we want to do with Women Are Mad. I also see with you your joyful warring against class and privilege, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I think both you and I give off the impression that we, you know, because we've got our kind of like Lambda exam nice speaking voices,
confident voices.
Yeah, people make assumptions about your background, you know, and both our backgrounds, don't they? That we come from
private schools, probably.
Yeah, exactly. And more privilege and more kind of here's the red carpet to life kind of worlds.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that you do that is incredible is that you're constantly weaving in references to privilege and class and, yeah, and how some people are handed opportunities throughout their lives, how many people have fought. I really like that about you. I really like that you see it and also recognise our own privilege that we have ourselves.
How relative it all is.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
But always how we need to have our eye to that.
Yeah, and that it needs to constantly be part of the conversation.
Absolutely.
And to acknowledge it, you know, that we've talked about, you often say, you know, that people mask it, don't they?
Yeah, they don't talk about it.
And they go, well, of course I was able to do that. Or the kind of Nepo baby thing. It's that kind of like, don't mention it, but obviously my dad paid for me to have a flat in central London and supported me until I was 35, so I was able to make a film.
Exactly.
You've kind of say it, haven't you?
Yeah, so you owe it to the people that didn't come back to say that how you got there.
That's it, Jen. You owe it. It's just to go, but look, I had this. So yeah, I'm talented, but I had this.
Yeah.
Give me that lift off.
And maybe I'm then going to give you some.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I think that's the other thing we've really noticed through doing what we're doing now is there are people who kind of put their money where their mouth is,
mm-hmm.
and walk the walk. And there are people that, and this whole kind of women supporting women thing,
okay.
I think has been really quite devastating at times to understand just how like paper thin that is for some people.
Yeah, I agree. And also, you are not afraid to have those conversations. Thank God. I mean, you've really stopped me from feeling mad about the ambitions in my life and where I am and where I want to be, because you shine bright lights in all dark shadows and all dusty corners. That's really important to have friends like that.
Mm. Thank you.
Yeah. Can I invite you in the rage room?
Yes. Hell yeah. Put me in.
Okay, fine. So would you like a baseball bat?
I'd love one.
Okay, please.
At least one.
Let me hand you the largest, most serious one and ask you, Jennifer Cox, what current news item is making you seed?
Men. Look at the world. Look at what is happening in the world. Look at who is screwing everything up for us. Where are the women? There are no women making decisions, having sensible conversations, talking things out. It's all men with their guns and penises.
Mm, thanks for that. Yes.
Interchangeable.
Yes, interchangeable. Aspects of modern life making you fume?
The fact that women are doing everything. The fact that we were told we can have it all, but actually we end up doing it all. The fact that there isn't a conversation with our partners, who we love and who we want to be best friends and equals to, about the fact that we're conditioned in this way, and therefore we need to have help extricating ourselves from that. So yes, our bodies lurch when a baby screams, and we're the ones, you know, that oftentimes feeding that baby from our own bodies. But because we know that, let's not pretend that working hard at school was going to be enough to get us equality.
Yes, well said. Behaviour of others which gets on your wick.
Fakeness, I think.
Yeah, I knew you would say that. Yeah.
I am obsessed with honesty.
Oh, really?
It has to be the real deal, or I have no interest.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, please, people, remain fake at some part, because basically it enables me to have really amusing debriefs with Jennifer about why she thinks that was really fake and not true. I love a deep dive with you. I really do. Current meme or slang making you rage, considering you're the queen of slang and abbreviation.
Yes, I am my own meme.
You are.
A machine.
Oh, you are.
Do you know, Dua Lipa, so I love Dua, watched her on SNL the other night and was reminded of that, the meme. What was it? Go girl, just do nothing, or however they said it. Yeah. And I thought, so you want to watch a woman basically sweat herself up into some kind of, you know, gyrating frenzy for you so you can get your rocks off. It pisses you off that she's just taking her time, being languid, owning the stage in the way she wants to. She's calling the shots. You don't like it.
Orcs, as you would say.
Yeah.
And yeah,
it puts the feeling of like discomfort back on the viewer. She's not taking it off you.
Speaking of discomfort, your yesterday's text, let's go for Cox, left me feeling really
for a Cox.
Yeah, let's go for a Cox scene.
Yeah.
And I dry retched and realized you meant cocktails. Yeah. So I personally would say occasionally, because you've got a prudish dress pal, abbreviations don't work.
What all the times?
Perhaps.
Abbreviations.
Jesus Christ. Yes, exactly. Okay. Lols.
Lols. Ciao. Yeah.
Ciao. You're brilliant. You are really brilliant, actually.
And so are you.
What I would love to say before we finish off is that everybody should buy this book. And as somebody who personally a couple of years ago would always say, but I'm not a very angry person, Jennifer Cox, I would say that anger for me has been the key, actually, in unlocking my ambition, my authenticity, and my true dreams. So I would really urge people to read this book, because it's not just for somebody who's feeling a bit cross about certain things in their lives. I actually think it's one of our fundamentals. And I think it's a really important book. And that's partly why I love doing this podcast with you, because it's been so interesting to see the viaducts that are created when you start talking about anger and where people go and what actually it can be and how people use it as a propulsive fuel when they're using it correctly. So I'm so proud of you. Now I'm going to get emotional, but I'm so proud of you for writing this book. I really am, because it's just a really important thing to talk about. And you really want women to do brilliantly. And I don't want to cry on this, but you know, it's a very inclusive book for getting everybody every woman to move forward in their lives and to enlarge their lives and not shrink. And there's something very beautiful and pure about that for me, that you want other women to celebrate themselves in all their mess and all their fury and all their and advocate for themselves and for others. And that is such a vital thing. So anyway, I'm bloody proud of you. Well done.
Thank you for listening and sharing in our anger.
And remember, you're not mad to feel mad.
Please like and subscribe. It helps other people find the podcast.